Hi, you're listening to Boggy Talk, Faith Conversations in the Mud, a resource of Church on Bayshore.
Well, hey, thanks for joining us today on Boggy Talk. How's everyone doing?
Great. I feel like I say that every time, and sometimes I mean it, and sometimes I'm just like, great.
Do you mean it today, Justin?
This past weekend is the kickoff to college football, and, you know, I feel like there's balance in the universe again. That's just kind of a fun thing for the fam. And, yeah, I mean, and there's, like, been this hint of fall in the air. I am doing fine.
Yeah.
There's always so much happening. I'm like, I'm good. Jesus is good.
It is interesting. In one of my groups I was in, or I am in, we were talking about things that are like, we hate to use the word an escape, but like a mental just kind of break.
Yeah.
And I was saying that football season, I do enjoy it because I can just like watch it, you know, and
I can
not
ignore
think about
all the
relational
things that,
drama and
yeah, you just
how
check
we're gonna,
out a little bit, fix
how
this.
We're going to put people where they need to go in January, where people are going to park
out
when we do our thing.
All the things that I need to fix around the house, or you know what? They're playing. These two teams that I could care less about.
I'm frustrated with them. I'm not frustrated with my own
life
right now.
It feels
I mean, obviously you could take that too far. Mm-hmm. And people do. Definitely.
I mean, you're a Seminole fan, so you may not enjoy football season as
I'm
much
gonna
as
I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Saturday was not a good day for us.
You played Alabama, right?
Yeah.
I cheer for the Seminoles because I want to see them do well. I don't have loyalty to Florida Gators, so as a Georgia fan. So I'm kind of like, you know, Switzerland when it comes to the Florida teams. And I don't really care, but I do cheer for the Seminoles because I just feel bad. Yeah.
You just feel bad.
I do.
So last year
sorry,
was bad.
Seminole friends.
Yeah, last year was very
I mean,
bad.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of
it was kind of sad as a Florida
was.
Gator fan, you know? Like, I went to the Florida State game.
Oh,
and
okay.
your stadium's being renovated. So it's like half empty.
Yeah.
And it was half empty from that.
Yeah.
You know, because no one wanted to come and it was freezing. And you guys, Florida didn't even play that good, but you just were so bad.
It was just
I was like, this
rough
is
year.
Really kind of sad.
Yeah. It was a rough year. Anyway. So when Florida and Florida State play, who do you cheer for?
Florida State. As an SEC guy, because I'm a Georgia fan. So, like, most people would be like, well, you got to cheer for the SEC. And I'm like, no I don't. Like, it's like Florida people didn't cheer for Georgia in the playoffs.
Well, some
like,
do.
Yeah.
I forget who originally said it, but cheering for an SEC team is like cheering for the devil because he's in the Bible. Like, I'm against our rivals.
I like
you
that.
Know, so.
Yeah, that's funny.
Anyway.
Well,
that's what this episode. We're done. That was all we're going to talk about, Boggy Talk.
Nice to see everybody. Today, we finished our last series. Your sermon series ended. We're moving on to a new one. And so today's episode of Boggy Talk, we're going to be talking a little bit about liturgy and Catholicism. And
the listeners just went away.
Yeah.
You said liturgy.
The what?
Yeah.
Which is really interesting, actually, because apparently there's more of a rise in people being attracted.
Apparently
yes. To, I don't know, churches, denominations that you do that. I guess all churches have a form.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
All churches have a form.
Maybe explain a little bit more.
Yeah, worship guy, what is liturgy?
Well, liturgy really is, I mean, it's like a rhythm of, or a cadence through which you express worship. So we would say, like, in liturgical, like, as a Baptist, like, you would say, well, liturgical, people would automatically think formal. Like, it's a very formal thing.
More rigid.
More rigid schedule. You know, I would say that's not really what liturgical means. That's just how it's often practiced or thought of. But it does usually is grounded in some type of rhythm. You know, it depends on the denomination and their liturgy. But liturgies of reading, liturgies of a service where there is a very predictable natural rhythm of a service that usually involves around an Old Testament reading, a New Testament reading, a specific type of prayer. Are types of prayer throughout a service.
Yeah, so, and then the church calendar is followed.
And then you take that to the next level, and there's the church calendar, and we move through different seasons of liturgy with the church calendar, Lent, Epiphany, you know, just some of these holidays until Advent. Mm-hmm. So I would then counter that and say, well, like you said, really every church does have some form of liturgy, you know, even you know, if you're at a church plant, I mean, week two, you already have some type of liturgy because it's the way that you're approaching things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So all churches are lit.
Lit. That's right. That's get lit. Saying. Get lit. I mean, even Baptist, the liturgy would be, you know, like we sing this song, we pray this prayer, and we have this rhythm of, you know, that there is mm-hmm. some yeah. type of.
Baptists
and
where it's, don't have
yeah.
rhythm.
Yeah. Baptists don't have rhythm. This is true. Trying to teach people to clap on two and four is difficult. So liturgies can be helpful. Yeah. And because they do provide some grounding, some structure that can be helpful, you know, just in, I wouldn't say accountability, but just in providing really the structure, the constructs to, you know, move on in faith.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, specifically regarding the articles that I've read, things that I've heard, mm-hmm. I think what they're saying is that men, specifically young men, but I think young people in general are drawn more to a liturgical style, a more formal style. And a couple of things about that. Well, A, they were on such a steep decline for such a long period mm-hmm. of time. So to say, like, there's a resurgence, it's like... Oh, okay. I mean,
that's like saying Florida State's having a great
yeah,
year
because exactly.
they won three
no,
games.
No, that's a great. No, seriously, that is a great.
Thanks, Justin.
I'm recovering from a cold, so I wasn't. I'm not. I wasn't coming up with it quick, and that was perfect. That was perfect. I do vow to make less Florida State jokes this season.
All right. Yeah,
regardless.
Well,
of
thank
it.
You.
I had my year. I had my year. But
that's right.
Yeah. So I would say first, like, that's kind of, you know, that. I think numbers can be a little misleading there, but I do think that there is some truth. I mean, mm-hmm. and again, Catholicism was rapidly on the decline, mm-hmm. so mainly because of the sex abuse scandal, and so they've made some reforms. They've definitely hired PR agencies yeah. clearly, and so they've probably bounced back a little bit from that. So again, I don't know how much that is like. Really a drawback to it as much as mm-hmm. millennials mm-hmm. and Gen X were so affected by all of that they were gone. And so Gen Z and maybe I guess Gen Alpha is coming about, but specifically Gen Z. So they don't have the same negative reaction mm-hmm. To those things. So yeah, I would say that. And then I would say that I do think that there has been at least of some younger people because there is so much information mm-hmm. and so much confusion, mm-hmm. they prefer a faith that just tells them what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the beautiful things about liturgy is that it is predictable
right.
In terms of what it provides. And it does provide a form of simplicity, which I do think is a valuable tool when it comes to, especially in our current culture, which we'll talk about a little bit more, but it does provide some of that structure. Like you said, it's kind of being told what to do. I mean, you will see there's resources, there's a liturgy for this day, like whether it's a liturgy for your child's first birthday. Now, that's often great marketing for someone who's like recognizing mm-hmm. there's right. this hunger for liturgy, so I'm going to write a book for
and
liturgies
when
and everything.
Sorry to interrupt, when do we start calling devotional liturgy?
Yeah.
Like so many Gen Zers like and millennials would be like, ugh, devotional culture. I'm like, the liturgy is literally a devotional.
Yeah,
so
right.
just because your grandma had called it a devotional yeah. doesn't
that's
mean
funny.
That it's not the same
yeah.
exact thing.
And again, it comes for Sorry. Me. It comes back on those
it.
Levels. It
no,
comes
seriously.
Back, yeah, but for me on those levels, it comes back to it's a help. It can be a helpful
it can,
tool
either way.
And,
yeah, yeah.
But it's not the ultimate tool. And it's
yeah.
not the ultimate way and only way to relate to God or grow in your relationship. And I do think a lot of it is personality based.
Yeah.
Like some people's mm-hmm. personalities just. They thrive on it, and they and it feeds that. Like I have family members that love like the liturgy, and it's comforting to them. And I'm like, that's great. It's not necessarily me, mm-hmm. but that doesn't mean I don't appreciate it or I just don't like check it out or read it. And like,
right.
oh, yeah, I do see this, but it's not me. Like,
yeah.
so it's fine. Like, yeah,
yeah, and you know, in the Catholicism specifically, I think is just probably maybe an amplified version of this mm-hmm. and that. I mean, if you feel completely confused about reality and like your life is untethered, here is this institution mm-hmm. that outdates really any institution that I can think of that exists right mm-hmm. now. And you belong to that, you know. And then, again, you don't have a lot of freedom. Like, you're told pretty much mm-hmm. how things are going to go from the hierarchy down. And So I do understand maybe the appeal to that in a day where everything is so all over the place, you know. Yeah. And I think some of this, we've talked about this on Buggy Talk before, is some of this, again, comes back to how upside down truth became in our culture, you know, how we just the progressive side just went all in. Mm-hmm. And people were like, whoa, what? Mm-hmm. You know, where we're denying science when we define male and female and all those things. And so I think that left a lot of young people who are their formative years, whereas we were figuring these things out, or not figuring these things out, messing these things up as a culture, they now are like, I need stability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
We've talked about that before too. Like, you know, this is why you wonder why, like, these mega church pastors and churches, like, who end up having such corruption, like, get to that point. Mm-hmm. But the reality is there's so many people who want to go to church and they want it to be drama free. And typically if you're at a smaller congregational led church, there, it's not drama free because mm-hmm. you have a lot of opinions.
Yeah.
And so I'm not saying what's right or
wrong.
In proximity. Yeah. So they would just rather go to like something that feels more formal and institutionalized and controlled. And then they find out 20 years later, there's all this corruption going on the scene.
Still there. Mm-hmm.
And how they react to that, I don't know. But they would trade that for having a fight about the carpet and, you know,
true.
And the music
yeah.
and all that stuff. So anyway.
Like, do you think that it's where people are, maybe that generation, they're seeking belonging, obviously. But it's almost like, I don't know, like they can mark the box, check the box, but they feel because it's predictable and it seems more authentic.
I was thinking about this. I think it could be that for some, absolutely. Like, oh, I've done my religious thing and this is easy. I don't know that that's necessarily the case for the majority. But
yeah, Church of the Highlands is exploding. Church 1122
is exploding.
Yeah, and
they're very much about the production and the
churches. Yeah.
But I do think some churches that are exploding have figured out, oh, people kind of want a little bit of this, so they like dabble in it a little bit.
That's a great point.
For sure.
We're going to say the Apostles' Nicene Creed.
Yeah, and so then you know, they feel
more academic.
I was thinking about like why is this, and I was trying to think even just mindset, like cultural things that influence. And I do think that you know, younger generation than us, like Gen Z, Gen Alpha, are growing up in a world
people
where
in their 30s and
that's
20s.
Right. But I think
we
it
can
really
all say
is
that at this
like
table
that's
now.
Right. like by and large, you know, our generation and older, things in the workplace or things in school were much more predictable. Like if you do these things, these will be the outcomes and you will be successful. And I feel like for this younger generation, particularly in their 20s, like it's so much more arbitrary. Like what is success? What drives you? Like, because the world is just changing and it's really not predictable like it was. Like it used to be like you go to school, you do well, you go to college, you go to trade school, you do this, you'll get a job. If you do these things at your job, you'll succeed. And now it's like, make up your own job, do this. And I think there's just these cultural feelings of like, when have I, and I do think that some of the liturgy and some of the things that we're seeing in the faith community is like, this is one area where I don't have to figure it out.
Mm. Right.
It is there. And I do think that that is a piece of the draw more than just like check a box. It is like, oh, it's there.
What's interesting is these are Gen X's kids, right, by and large.
Yeah.
And so Gen X actually had a similar resurgence, and that's what led to the great conservative resurgence, like the young angry reform movement, mm-hmm. you know, all that stuff. Mark Driscoll, if you're familiar with that, where you would literally go and this dude would tell you what to do, right?
Yeah.
And it was like basically Fight Club, if you're familiar with Fight Club. Seriously,
right,
you know, and I'm speaking this as neutrally as possible. Well, now you have that generation of their kids and they there's some similar in that they just want to be told what to do, but they're anti-patriarchal.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be through a Driscoll type, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be through an institution, if you will. So absolutely. But I want to pause and say, at the same time though, Gen Z is flocking to hype.
Mm-hmm.
So it's both sides.
Yeah,
it's
it really
both
is.
Sides,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Gen Z is flocking to wherever the hype is, this whole Sean Fuchs guy, you know, or whatever, like all that you care much. I mean,
that
it,
was
both.
How you say his last name and what it sounds like when I hear his name.
So I would just say that probably we continue to see culture and in our country, we're just speaking mostly in our country, just be polarized in the way they express faith, politics, everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. Well, there was another article that we wanted to talk about, and the background was mainly about the Asbury. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
That revival, and like it was their perspective of why it happened and why these young people were so drawn to that. And the points that they had, like kind of when we were talking about this, we have come to the conclusion that a lot of these things are just always going to be what people are searching for. And it's, I think we've talked about this on Boggy Talk before, that it almost seems like the previous generation, what they overemphasized or underemphasized, and the next generation kind of takes a different
the pendulum
look at that. Yeah, the
pendulum
just going back and forth. But some things that they were saying that, that was successful about that revival, now we don't know, you know, the fruit. We could see maybe now the fruit of it. that those people, they wanted less performance, more presence. So an opportunity, you know, it, everything they want to be authentic. And their reasoning is because I think so much of their world is social media. Everything can be manipulated or made different. And so it's now, even like with social media trends, the trend is to be just super raw, no filter.
Well, this is my moment, then.
Like, you don't need to do all that. I mean, you see these kids and their
300
point,
followers on Instagram.
Their 0.5 pictures, you know. Like, they don't care. They just, like, what's in the moment kind of thing. And so I feel like it kind of.
All right. We already look like a 0.5
picture. That's just right, man. So. It's getting worse every day, I feel like.
So, yeah. I mean, what do you guys think about that?
Yeah, that the less performance, more presence, like, I get it. But at the same time, I think what people don't realize, and this is, it's easy to see maybe on the outside looking in or the inside, whatever I am, inside looking out, whatever. I'm in both the inside and the outside.
You're an insider now,
right,
Justin.
But it's like the danger is that we have now, I think, in many circles, performative presence where we are so
– I'm getting deep.
But I just think like people know. Like people are aware. Like we have – we want to be present. But they're not really present. They're appearing to be present and trying to capture the look of being present and in the moment. And I'm like the whole – the app Be Real, you know? Like you're, the whole app was like
to be
just
real?
Take a picture like as you are now. But then Be Real started allowing redos. And you can post as much later as you want to because people don't really want to be real. They want to look like they're being real.
Right,
And I think that less performance, more presence, it's like that is a great idea. But that's – not the full story. People want the presence, but then you realize like there is a level of expectation of what it should look like and sound like, which then means you've got some type of performance going on.
Not much to add to that.
Sorry.
No, that's
There's
great.
My rant.
Another thing that they said was that Gen Z wanted less production, more participation. So more stripped down, which is different from this media onslaught idea, which I can see them wanting that. At the same time, I feel like the whole mega church situation is like that very thing. Is this really who you are?
Right.
You know, do you act like that when you're off stage, or do you talk like that? And I think people in general do want that. It's just they're tired of the
And it's hard.
You,
it's hard to know, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you guys know, like I'm not performing on Sunday. Like that's literally James is like that all the time. You know, so the dumb comments. It's literally me all the time.
Yeah.
But I think, especially the bigger a church gets and the more disconnected you are from the leaders on the platform, you really don't know, you know. And so, that would be an argument for a certain church size. But again, mega churches are continuing to grow. We're seeing actually a polarization where you do have more small churches and more big churches. I mean, that's kind of – it's almost like the middle is getting cannibalized because there's a certain critical mass you have to get to sustain that. And I would say young people are flocking to both. But I think to Justin's point is a lot of times it's like this surface level expectation of these things like less performance and, you know, more presence. It's like, and then what was the one you just said? Sorry, I messed that one up.
Less production, more participation.
Yeah. I mean, again, I mean, it's almost similar thing. Like,
Yeah, I mean, I think about it in terms of like our worship services. Like there's a tension here because we don't really want this huge production, but there's a level of being this size of church and the facilities and things where there is a level of production that has mm-hmm. to take place at a baseline level. And I think if you like think about like worship videos that you see, you know, on social media or YouTube, where it's like always the same look. It's always a bunch of people kind of surrounding a worship leader in the middle, and it looks so authentic and real. But that is one, like, it's staged that way. Mm-hmm. It is produced to look like people are participating. So we watch that and think that looks so natural. And why can't Sunday mornings be like that? And it was like, well, because they produced it to be that way. Right. Like that yeah. really is what it is. And so there's a level of like, you have to understand, like there is a level of production that even goes into the perceived participation yeah. that I think people are craving and longing for.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, of course we want more participation, and we're mm-hmm. constantly trying to have those conversations about our worship gatherings.
I know.
In life group. And I mean, not just worship gatherings, but in life groups. Yeah. Like how do we get more participation in those things? Yeah.
Right, that they're not just an yeah. observer in mm-hmm. that. Another thing they said was less personality and more humility. The one thing I can say that I feel like is a drawback with the mega churches in this is that, and I can see where they're going, is that I felt like in certain mega churches, pastors, leadership, like they were untouchable. Mm-hmm. You know, there was no like relationship. You didn't really know who these people were. Right. And so I think that to some people that can be kind of off-putting, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's so they right. want the opposite end of that to be mm-hmm. able to feel like the relational piece is not there.
Yeah.
And to me, that's, I think the biggest thing from both of these things, you know, the previous article and that is that people, it's that relational mm-hmm. component that they're really mm-hmm. diving for yeah, that they yeah, want absolutely. That they don't realize yeah. that they want uh-huh. but so much of it is connected to that yeah. right. piece.
Church is a family, so mm-hmm. that people should want that and have that in their church. I mean mm-hmm. undeniably so yeah. I mean I think that but sometimes any young person just expects that to be like spoon-fed to them, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean I was once a young person, like I'm not exempt from this, like so it's like I want all this, but I want you to provide all this. Mm-hmm. And so we're like, I'm not a consumer, I don't have the expectations that boomers had. I'm like, you are very much a consumer, you just have different kind of expectations.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And they're less showy, I guess, but yeah. they're still very high.
And that's
high
all of us. Yeah, that's all of us. Yeah.
So mm-hmm.
yeah. Well, speaking of,
but we skipped over, I was going to say the one that says less noise, more space. I think that's yep. another one like mm-hmm. that I've noticed is as a pastor, people want like space, you know, to just like think and talk, but they want it like within this small window because they're filling their life. Like basically people are filling their life up so much. Mm-hmm. And then they're filling every gap up with scrolling. Like, mm-hmm. and so like, I find it interesting that, you know, millennial men and Gen Z men, and I'm an old millennial man, but like, you know, that they are less inclined to post on technology, but they'll scroll crazy,
yeah. mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And so like, it's like they may not be producing content, but they are consuming content, mm-hmm. but then they want the church community to provide space, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, in this 45 minutes.
That's yeah. exactly what I was thinking when you were saying that. It's like, we want, I mean, this is just, we want deep Bible teaching that's also really applicable with a great worship experience, and we want community, and not just like I want to be known by a lot of people, but I also want a few.
I want to serve in a way that makes a difference.
Yeah, and I want to do that in 1 hour a week. Like,
yeah.
Well, it's just
make
not,
it look good and sound good and all
that. I would love to do all that in an hour a week yeah. too, but it's not. That's not real life.
And for clarity, we sound like we're frustrated. We're not frustrated. Well, maybe a little bit frustrated, but like. I mean, we're here for those people. I
yeah,
mean, those people are in our church
every
Sunday, some of them, not all of them, but like consumers are there, mm-hmm. and we're patiently waiting for the Lord to engage them and wake them up. Like, so we're not mad about that at all.
Yeah. It's like a burden. Like, I just want people to see, like, and myself, like I, when I say I want people to see, and I want myself to see new in a new way every moment. Like, I want all these things that I'm selfish. And I don't want to be that way. And I just want to be like totally captured by Jesus and be willing to do whatever it takes.
Yeah. But, you know, I think,
it's a burden.
And I know we have questions to get to, but like, I think these are the same things that people have been wanting. you know, one of them was about humility, you know. Yeah, we're created for Jesus Christ,
yeah.
the Son of God, who condescended, came to the earth,
yeah. mm-hmm.
died on a cross. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, to, we're created served, for that. And so, yeah, and only God knows the heart of men, you know, women. Kelly, what do you think about the fact that so much of this is like men? Like, they're saying men are like leading the way in a lot of this. And I've even seen some articles that like the faith has been like, so female Christianity has been female driven. I would buck against that because you look at this church and I'm like, well, this church was probably way male dominated for a long time. Like, anyway, you know, what do you think about that?
About them saying that it was mainly men.
Yeah.
Looking, yeah. I mean, I thought that was interesting that they had singled them out saying that they were the loneliness, loneliest. Thank you.
Loneliest. It's contagious. I couldn't yes. say it either.
And I mean, it might be that they were looking for that. I think women are typically, they can connect easier with people. And so they might be looking at different, you know, areas to do that, not necessarily the church. I mean, maybe this particular article came from a headmaster of a school, so it could have been all. male school.
Yeah, yeah, that's yeah. true.
You know, that kind of thing,
that's
too.
Funny.
I think that there is just some of the personalities that I've seen, like, on Instagram, this kind of, I don't even know what you call it. It's not really patriarchal, but it's kind of just this, like, I am male. And, mm-hmm. you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
I don't know if some of that mm-hmm. is it, too, which, like, some of it is good, I think, to see,
right.
like, them stepping into that role, but at the same time, just making sure that it's for the right, you know, mm-hmm. things and the right reasons. I don't know.
No, that's fair.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, somebody else is trending right now, and that is Cracker Barrel.
Oh, Herschel. Cracker Barrel.
Yeah. So what do you guys think about the rebrand?
The rebrand and the retraction of the rebrand.
Yeah,
wow.
I know.
Was it a full thing? Though?
I think that, well, I don't know about the interior design, but okay. I just saw that they're going to keep the original, well, wow. the most recent logo. Yeah.
Yeah. The original logo.
Yeah, I mean, my thoughts are, I mean, there's all kind of, you know, all kinds of articles about who the CEO is and that she's this, trying to push this agenda. And I mean, I don't know about all that. At the end of the day, I'm just like, I feel like this is just a seriously out of touch move with your clientele. Like, no one goes to Cracker Barrel for a modern experience. Like, you go because you want country cooking and you want it to be like your grandma,
yeah.
great grandma's house. And
yeah.
so, I mean, you're not going. I mean, you're not going to Cracker Barrel to go inside and feel like you're having brunch with, you know, like you're going uh-huh. there because you want the extra syrup on your pancakes with butter and, you know, gravy. And it just felt like, really, this is what you're trying to do? I just feel like it was out of touch with your client base. End of the day, I don't know okay. if there was some agenda. Maybe there was, but I don't pay attention that closely.
Yeah, I really never go to Cracker Barrel.
I mean, it's been a while.
I mean, maybe they're trying to get me to come. I don't yeah. know. Like, I think you got a bunch of things going on, but I do think it's the backlash is connected to what we're talking about.
Yeah, it really is.
You know, and that like they see it as another progressive throwing out. You know.
Yeah.
This institution of America. Yeah, like, well, yeah. how long has Cracker Barrel really been around? I don't
Lebanon,
know.
Lebanon, Tennessee institution, you know. Yeah.
Man, hash brown, the Cracker Barrel hash brown casserole.
You got to get it extra crispy.
Yeah,
if
did
you
they?
Do that.
I hope they kept that on the menu.
I hope they're going to
change
be,
the menu, though.
No, they changed the menu. They were updating the menu, too. Okay. So that was another piece of it. I mean, okay. maybe.
Yeah, I hope they're not being, I hope they'll stop being so stingy with the jelly. But again, I haven't been in like a year and a half to a Cracker yeah. Barrel, so mm-hmm. I really can't speak to it. Yeah, I mean, I think. You have her saying on video, woke, I'm using that in quotes, you know, stuff. And then you have this rebrand, which may or may not mm-hmm. actually be connected. But, mm-hmm. you know, where words are abundant, transgression is not lacking. And if mm-hmm. I could give any advice to any leader, you know, it's don't have a podcast where you talk for 45 minutes and say something you shouldn't say. Like, I mean, you just really need to be aware of everything that you're saying is mm-hmm. going to be used against you, and
yeah.
it's a filter. And so, mm-hmm. so I think that, and I do think Yeah, I'm like, why do we care so much?
I know, right,
I am like, Christians truly care more care about this than
the real, yeah,
the real things. Mm-hmm. Like,
there's definitely some clickbait there because anybody sees the word woke and they're
that word gets thrown around to enrage a certain group to motivate them to act a certain way to get results.
Yeah, but then I don't know, like. Was there really, like, is there racist tenets to Cracker Barrel?
I looked it up because I was very confused about why. I guess I missed her quote.
Yeah. I mean, I guess just that era in general
I think it's because of association. I could be totally wrong on this, that, like, the Cracker Barrel is literally just, that was a thing. Like, you had the crackers, barrels of crackers, but cracker in itself is used in a racist way against white people, and so it's like, oh, where are we going to do all the? That's what I'm like. I don't have time to research or dig into this. But just give me some hash brown casserole.
I'm going
to
stop talking because I'll just get in trouble. But I don't understand that fully. Mm-hmm. I do remember we had a we went to Cracker Barrel with our friend who was African American when I was little, and she was like, Cracker Barrel? Am I allowed there? So, like, I remember.
I do think
that people probably wonder about the name. Yeah. You know, what does the name mean? But clarity answers all that. You know, that's.
Well, I just looked at it as I'm like, I think the colors are ugly. And I saw this thing on Canva. It was like, if I was the rebrand, or this is what I would do, and I'm like, because I think it looks old, and I think it needed an update. I didn't, you know, that was my perspective of it. Like,
My favorite meme was like, it looks like the millennials inherited their boomer's parents' house and flipped it twice the value.
That's funny. Exactly. That is funny.
Makes sense.
Maybe that's what struck a nerve. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, who knows? I'm glad those are the big things we're talking about though. And
Uncle Herschel lives on.
Well, on a little bit of a more serious topic, you guys have any suggestions for resources that you would recommend for somebody who might be questioning their faith, what they believe about God, doctrine, anything like that? Something that's do you have for adults and for kids? Resources that
great.
You would.
Not joking. It sounds like I'm joking. The Bible.
Yeah.
Church, community, people to ask questions with. If you remember our Drift series, I might even encourage you to go back and listen to some of that. And just we talked about, like, I think people being able to ask those questions of believers who have a more reasoned faith. Sometimes there needs to be a gentle way of being like, you're arrogant, like, you know, you think you're the only person that's ever asked that question, but you probably don't want to say it to that them like that, because if they're in an antagonistic mode, but like helping them see that. Confronting Christianity by Rebecca McLaughlin's a great book for people who are doubting things. I would always go to Reason for God. Mere Christianity is a great argument from an atheism standpoint. And then I'm not trying to be funny. Again, like, just Google, like, just about anything. And by God's grace, there's tons of resources out there and different websites, Lifeway, Gospel Coalition, others that point to this. CARM, even though I don't always agree with that guy's approach, he has a lot of great apologetics information that just kind of diffuses those quick questions that we have, and Satan tries to plant a seed with that. But ultimately, the gospel being regularly preached to them and being loved is the greatest answer.
Yeah, I agree with all those resources. They're great. And I think just to emphasize something you said was that you need the church community in this. And I think so many people's questions kind of, you know, they grow because they don't have anyone that they're asking them to, or who's helping them think through them, or you know, push back, or just be patient with them and let them. You know, we sometimes want quick answers to very difficult questions that honestly are lifelong questions that we get settled on things. Then we, you know, something happens in life, and so, you know, the itch is, you know, the wound is reopened, and we have to go back to the Lord and these things. And so I just say, like, this is the importance of the Christian community, of having someone. Don't struggle in questions alone, mainly because one, somebody else probably either is thinking or has thought the same thing, and two, there's power in confessing that, and I just want to understand, and people walk away from it. So,
That's good. All right. Well, if you have any other questions, you can email me at kelly@churchonbayshore.org. And thanks for tuning in. We'll see you guys next time.
Thanks for listening to Boggy Talk. We are so glad you joined in the conversation. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss a beat.